This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, July 2nd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the 12,000-plus-acre Oil Springs fire south of Rangeley has calmed down considerably this week, despite a very close call. We'll have more from the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition member station, KVNF. An art show opening tonight in North Boulder paints a picture of people who made the news in the eventful last year and a half. And it's the first Friday of the month, and we have a new edition of Nature Almanac. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Today's guest is Symbol Ali Karamali, author of the book Demystifying Sharia: What It Is, How It Works, and Why It's Not Taking Over Our Country. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, when you can start your weekend off right with an eclectic mix of music until noon. And now we'll start with the headlines. Governor Jared Polis has declared a drought emergency for 21 counties across the western part of the state. Much of western Colorado is currently experiencing a prolonged multi-year drought, which in turn creates conditions for large-scale wildfires. The federal government's National Integrated Drought Information System classifies the drought conditions across a broad swath of western counties as extreme to exceptional. Those exceptional drought conditions include a massive area across the southwestern United States, encompassing regions of six states. Park rangers are imploring the public to keep these drought conditions in mind when recreating on public lands this holiday weekend. Visitors to parks should inform themselves of rules and bans within each park. It's part of what the Park Service calls Know Before You Go. Fireworks are prohibited on all federal park land, and smoking and shooting is banned in many other areas. Visitors planning a holiday trip can check the website of the park or Park Service ahead of their vacation for rules and restrictions. Colorado public health authorities have modified guidance with regards to face coverings. An updated health order, which took effect yesterday, requires medical-grade face coverings for unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated employees in settings which serve vulnerable or at-risk populations, such as homeless shelters, prisons, jails, and emergency medical or other healthcare settings. Unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated visitors, residents, and patients in these settings must also wear masks, though they do not need to be medical grade. The new health order will remain in effect until August 1st. Federal guidance on face coverings mandates mask use in other settings, including in public transit. And in news related to public transit, the city of Boulder has scaled back the frequency of the HOP bus service due to a shortage of bus drivers. The HOP service previously ran buses every 15 minutes before 7 p.m. The new schedule, taking effect immediately, will send buses in 25-minute intervals. This reduction in service comes as Boulder Valley School District struggles to hire bus drivers to meet the transportation needs of students in the upcoming year. When it comes to private vehicles, recent years have brought a spike in the theft of a specific car part, catalytic converters. According to the American Automobile Association, or AAA of Colorado, year-to-date thefts of catalytic converters in 2021 represent an increase of more than 1,500% over 2019 levels. Precious metals contained in catalytic converters can be sold for scrap for around $100, but their removal can damage a vehicle's entire exhaust system and cost more than $1,000 to replace. The state AAA has launched a new anti-theft program in partnership with the Colorado State Patrol. Sergeant Blake White explains.
Right now, what we're doing is getting auto body shops or different auto shops to install a serial number in a sticker form, and it actually etches it into your catalytic converter. And our hope is that's going to help stop thefts. The reason we think that's going to help stop thefts is the scrap yards right now don't know where the catalytic converters are coming from because there's no way to track them. There's no specific number to them. So when you apply this sticker and this etching to your catalytic converter, it identifies it and tracks it down to your vehicle. That's going to help law enforcement and prosecutors have better cases as we track down these thieves, but it's also going to help deter the crime in the first place, because criminals are less likely to take that if they know there's no value to it.
Motorists interested in the free program can check details at AAA.com/protect Sheridan. Today's forecast from the National Weather Association shows partly sunny skies for most of the day with a chance of rain tonight. Highs in the mid-80s with a low of 60. Highs in the coming days will be in the low 90s with sunny skies during the daytime and a chance of showers at night through the holiday weekend. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 60 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The 12,000-plus-acre Oil Springs fire south of Rangeley has calmed down considerably this week, thanks to much-needed rain, the hard work of local fire protection crews, plus more than 300 federal firefighting personnel, and a bit of luck. But things didn't look quite so positive last week, as exceptional drought conditions and heavy winds fueled extreme fire behavior that forced emergency evacuations, power shutoffs, road closures, and threatened a large natural gas processing facility. Lucas Turner from the Rio Blanco Herald Times newspaper produced a feature for KVNF about the state's largest fire.
It's business as usual at Colorado Northwestern Community College campus in Rangeley, Colorado, at least as far as the landscaping goes. As for everything else happening on the campus, well, it's not exactly what a prospective student might expect if they were to show up for a visit. Parking spaces are mostly filled with government vehicles, and the surrounding areas host trailers for food, sanitation, supplies, and showers. At the base of the student dorms, hundreds of tents cover the grass, temporary shelters for many of the over 400 federal firefighting personnel called to the west end of Rio Blanco County to fight the Oil Springs fire, about 15 to 20 miles south of the CNCC campus.
Usually fire season doesn't really start. The bigger ones usually don't start until after the 4th of July. So here we are on number 3.
That's Rio Blanco County Sheriff Anthony Mazzola. He explains that the ongoing fire, fortunately mitigated by recent and much-needed precipitation events, is the third in the county this year, though the first two were quickly snuffed out by local fire protection crews. Unlike the first two fires in RBC this year, the Oil Springs fire has posed a far more dangerous threat. Originally sparked by lightning on June 18th, the fire burned a few hundred acres of dry vegetation in 2 days, but remained manageable at a local level. Then the wind picked up.
The fire literally blew up. It went from several hundred acres to, I think, almost 5,000 acres. One of the BLM firefighters, local BLM firefighters that have been doing this for a long time, says he hasn't seen fire do this. He's like, this was crazy.
The wind that drove the first rapid expansion of the Oil Springs fire also lit a spot fire 6 miles ahead of the direction it was pushing to the east, prompting emergency evacuations, power shutoffs, and the closure of Highway 139. Rio Blanco County Emergency and Natural Resources Manager Eddie Smersina, who assisted with firefighting efforts that night, describes being caught in the middle of thick smoke.
You essentially had to remember where your vehicle was sitting, and then as that smoke came in and just nailed you, I mean, you can't see or breathe.
Right.
Then you just try to basically walk blind back to your vehicle to get out of it.
Mazzola noted how much of a factor the smoke played in prompting the highway closure.
You couldn't even see your vehicle 15, 20 feet away because the smoke was so bad. Because
wow.
You can just imagine if we had not shut the highway down and we got public coming through, now we're going to be dealing with crashes and all that.
The east moving expansion of the fire Sunday night also motivated first responders to call in federal help.
That's when the decision was made, we need to get a team in here and get some help, because this is way beyond all of our local capabilities.
On Monday, June 21st, Great Basin Incident Management Team started arriving and officially took control of the fire on Tuesday, June 20th. That night, it blew up again, driven by wind to the north, moving more than 5 miles and burning another 5,000 acres in just a few hours. The flames also pushed directly toward one large and potentially very explosive target, the Dragon Trail Natural Gas Plant, owned and operated by Utah Gas Corp. The The gas plant, which processes tens of millions of cubic feet of natural gas per day before it gets shipped out by pipeline, quickly became the main focus of fire suppression efforts as the flames moved toward it.
The absolute worst-case scenario is the fire's coming, they hit the buttons, do an emergency shutdown, and leave, and there's still product inside the plant that has potential of igniting. So that's the worst-case scenario.
Fortunately, that worst-case scenario did not happen, and the plant is no longer threatened by a rapidly moving wildfire. Utah Gas Corp operations manager Ronnie Plummer says preparing for events like these is an annual mitigation effort, which primarily involves keeping infrastructure like well pads and compressor stations free of vegetation that could increase the chance of ignition.
We have everything sprayed inside our fence. I mean, we do everything possible because we know this country. Mm-hmm. Catch fire anytime. So that's why you see very few of the locations actually catch fire.
Plummer also says the threat of fire is always on the minds of operators, noting how the nature of oil and gas extraction activities can be helpful for fighting wildfires. For example, he says oil-filled workers are often the first to spot and call in new fire activity since they work in remote locations. Additionally, oil and gas extraction logistics can sometimes put operators in a good position to assist with firefighting efforts as needed, including on the Oil Springs fire.
Our guys, because they were so shorthanded, helped us set up the sprinkler system. We, as Utah Gas, hauled in four different tanks. It's 1,800 barrels of water we hauled out there the first day for them to use, not just to protect the plant, but everything around.
RBC Sheriff Anthony Mazzola estimated that the fire came within about 1 mile of the gas plant, which he says processes around 30 million cubic feet of compressed gas each day. He explains how the threat to the plant increased the priority level for federal resources to be allocated, despite those resources being spread thin due to other large fires in the region. Mother Nature, despite her initial wrath, also offered cooling temperatures and rain to northwestern Colorado earlier this week, tempering the fire and allowing crews to double containment from 30% on Tuesday, June 28th, to nearly 60% on Wednesday. But with rain comes lightning and the potential for new fires crop up.
Oh, probably isn't the best place to be either. So,
Sheriff Mazzola says he's optimistic about the state of the Oil Springs fire despite the chaos last week, though he adds he won't be planning any personal trips out of Rio Blanco County until the fire season is over, which, if drought conditions persist, will be with us well beyond the summer of 2021. For KVNF News, I'm Lucas Turner.
It's the first Friday of the month and time for Nature Almanac. Jeweling damselflies are a relative of dragonflies with an iridescent emerald body. Their big black wings make them look like butterflies. A gem of a stream at Flag Park in Lafayette is home to many jewel rings in July. Naturalist Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman report.
It's July. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists, Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman.
We're at Flag Park in Lafayette, just a little bit south of Baseline Road, and we're looking out across some beautiful grassland, rolling hills.
We're seeing bumblebees and skippers.
There are a lot of white butterflies flitting about.
Oh, a big fight happened between two dragonflies that were tail chasing each other like two old World War II planes. Somebody got too close to someone else's favorite feeding territory.
There's a little creek below us that we're going to search for the ebony wings.
Today we're going to go look for one of the damselflies called a ebony jewel wing. Damselflies, to distinguish them from dragonflies, a dragonfly holds their wings almost perpendicular to their body out, like a plane. Damselfly folds them neatly over their back. Damselflies come in all different sizes, from very tiny fork tails to these very big, broad-winged damselflies, as they call them. Ebony jewel wing. They're almost 2 inches in length, which is probably the biggest damselfly in North America. It's spectacular with a metallic blue-green head thorax and abdomen, and then these really black wings.
It's a relatively new species to Boulder County. This year, ecologist Bev Baker alerted us that they are here. It usually is associated with fairly slow-moving creeks and waters. Uh-oh, Scott's found.
See by the baby's breath? There's one about 2 feet behind it. There it is.
We're edging closer to the creek.
See the baby's breath?
Yeah.
Look at halfway in between.
Yes, yes. Oh, Scott. It is gorgeous. What a thrill. This is the ebony wing with her wings folded back. There it goes again. Gorgeous when it's flying because it's got a real wiggly kind of flight.
These broad-winged damselflies almost resemble butterflies because of their big broad wings. They have a really amazing fluttering flight.
It's almost a helicopter type flight.
They use these black wings to signal each other. You'll see them perched on a leaf and they'll flare the black wings out, kind of like an air traffic controller on an aircraft carrier signaling somebody. And they'll flare those wings out to say, "Hey guy, come on over," or "Stay away from me. This is my territory. This is where I'm hunting insects."
I just spotted a mature male that has a bright emerald body.
There's three or four perched in the willows that overhang the creek. They're all sort of lined up with their heads facing the creek so that they can catch insects that are emerging off the water surface and nab them quickly out of the air.
Oh, there he goes. He just flew.
Yeah. They're like flying sticks of emerald.
Yes, that would be a better name. Emerald stick.
Here at the beginning of July, we're just at the earliest part of the season. Right around July 14th or 15th, there'll be hundreds here.
They have a fairly short lifespan, just a few weeks. So get out here in July if you want to see them.
Scott Siebers and Ruth Carol Cushman are friends and Boulder naturalists.
An art show opening tonight in North Boulder paints a picture of people who made the news in the eventful last year and a half. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with painter Susan Murphy at the Nobo Community Center ahead of her opening tonight.
Wondering what to do, I thought, well, I'm just going to paint. I began painting helpers and essential workers, and then as the news went on, it just kept evolving. So we went into Black Lives Matter, we went into protests, the election.
Local artist Susan Murphy walks around the Nobo Community Center Gallery in North Boulder, briefly describing the dozens of paintings on the walls. They are mostly portraits of people who helped to shape and influence a year that marked all of our lives. The artwork is part of a solo show opening tonight called Portraits of a Topple World.
Personal, very personal painting of me alone in a virtual Thanksgiving in the holidays. A painting of my grandchildren masked with a masked Santa. Now we're into 2021. We went on to the special election in Georgia. One of my favorite paintings is the first vaccination in New York. And of course then it was the insurrection, the inauguration, and I had planned on ending with Amanda Gorman, who inspired all of us with her beautiful words and her incredible delivery. But after the verdict with Derek Chauvin, my granddaughter said, "Nani, you have got to paint Derek in handcuffs." So that's my last painting.
How many paintings?
There's 65 paintings, beginning with the memorial of the doctor in Wuhan, doctor who tried to warn the world, ending with Chauvin. 65 paintings. Some people I know, some people I am very attached to, and many, many people I have no idea who they are. This picture of Greta Thunberg, she represents my whole show. I've named that painting Toppled World because she is the one who is the conscience of the next generation. And I have her in front of a background of scorched earth. That's my favorite painting.
While looking at the pictures right now, what comes to my mind is everything that the young people have been saying lately, that we need to wake up, and that the pandemic was one thing, but the real next crisis that we are facing and that is near us is climate change.
That's exactly how I feel, and I just think that painting of Greta really pretty much says it all. She's very pensive. She's forewarning us of what our future looks like. She doesn't take no. She wants action.
These portraits that you have displayed today, they were born thanks to this time that you had to reflect. Now that we are coming out, now that, you know, a lot of people are getting vaccinated and life is coming back to normal, would you say that in a way you're going to be missing that time that you had for reflection?
While you were talking, I'm looking at the painting of AOC. Whenever I look at that painting, I always feel like she's telling me what we're supposed to do, and that she and the other progressives are really the voice of the future. Of course, I don't want to go back. I just don't know what's going
to
happen.
Going back to normal will be that we forget what the pandemic has taught us. That is, we need to change.
Well, when we see all the protesters that came out of the George Floyd murder, they have a lot of influence, and things are changing. We had Derek Chauvin sentenced to 22 years. That's the first police officer in Minnesota to ever serve any time whatsoever. I believe things are changing.
You have captured the precise moments of change and the precise moments that really touch our souls. There's sadness, there's happiness, there's reflection.
I had no shortage of material. Every morning I woke up during that incredibly chaotic year. There was a new headline, there was a new event, there was new material, and I just put it down on canvas. This was a personal mission for me, just keeping me sane during the pandemic. Being shuttered in my house without a mission, that was just not an option.
If you can just reflect on the international vibe that you also brought with your paintings.
Greta's my international hero. I think that she's really the one that will inspire the next generation to work towards alleviating climate change.
Not everybody can put out something tangible as a reflection of this year.
It just was natural. I didn't really think about it. I just woke up in the morning, paid attention to what was going on, and put it down for posterity. I had no idea what I was going to do with these paintings. I just painted. And when it was over, I went off into the desert and lived out the last few months of COVID safely out by myself. And I was kayaking on Lake Mead. And when I got out, there were texts from all my children, "Where are you?" And I knew something was wrong. And that was the day that I found out about the mass shooting in Boulder. And all of a sudden, everything sort of came together. And I thought, well, that's where I want to put this body of work. I want to put it to benefit the victims of the mass shooting. So all the proceeds from my show will be going to support the families.
That was portrait painter Susan Murphy. All the proceeds of the exhibit will go to the Colorado Healing Fund to benefit the victims of the recent mass shooting in Boulder. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
And that does it for today's edition of The Morning Magazine. Special thanks to news staff Rosanna Longo and Hannah Lee Myers. And as always, to the volunteers Jamie Sudler and Steve Miller. Also, thanks to Shelley Schlinder for today's edition of Nature Almanac.